You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 18 August, U.S. import-export data due later this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Viv Govender, Rand Swiss, Thungela results, market really liked those numbers, and SPAR, chair and deputy chair both exiting. Chatting with Tim Acker from Allan Gray, gold, they've been acting like risk on assets rather than safe haven. And we're going to chat around WhatsApp fee increases. This is for businesses, and potentially the impact is small per transaction, but big overall. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. ITAC reviews European chicken anti-dumping tariffs. Duty set to expire at the end of the week. Business Day breakthroughs. India opens door to South African citrus. New treatment options improve access, but tariffs remain a barrier for the growers. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.5%, Nasdaq a 0.5% lower. The East is mostly red, in fact mixed. We've got Sydney 0.5% up, we've got Tokyo a couple of points higher, and then Hong Kong down 0.7%, Tencent 1.7% lower. Commodities are mixed, unchanged. Gold futures, no change, 4,452. Brent is higher, 91.36. Platinum unchanged, 1,762. Palladium lower, 1,322. The Rand is 16.25. Bitcoin, 63,900. And top 40 opening call, red open, 660 points or 0.6% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Viv Govender, Rand Swiss. Viv, appreciate the time. Thungela results. I mean, good looking results. Market really liked the results, but I got to say, I can't get my head around coal. I mean, it's old school power. Truthfully, we need a lot of power. Maybe the old school doesn't matter. Your thoughts on the numbers, your thoughts on coal energy more broadly?
Look, I mean, I think we're heading into a point in which energy is going to be a real demand, you know, supply constraint in the world. If you look at what's happening with oil right now, and you look at places like China and other parts of the world that are trying to shift away from, you know, oil, a lot of them going towards, you know, electric vehicles, for instance, that requires coal. You look at the data centers out there. Yeah. You can't power those things, you know, with solar and wind. You need a steady supply of electricity. And the options basically come down in this current world to coal and nuclear. And nuclear, of course, you know, you can't build in the world at the moment, especially in the West. So coal, I think, is really, you know, not... what's the whole saying? News of its demise would be greatly exaggerated. So yeah, I do think that coal is a very key part of the world moving forward. Especially, like I said, I mean, from everything you see in the AI space, especially, you're seeing, you know, double digit shortages in terms of you know, electricity supply in the West, especially in the US. And the Chinese, for instance, like as you know, are switching massively over to electric vehicles. Yes, they're building solar, they're building nuclear. But they definitely are still like looking at coal.
Absolutely. It was a couple of years ago. I did a whole bunch of research on it. And there were, as I recall, at that point, there was 50 or 60 coal power plants being built around the world. It's not as if we completely abandoned coal. And to your point, the demand is going to be there and there is stations being built.
Yeah, look, I mean, I do think that, you know, especially after Fukushima a couple of years ago, for those that remember, when, you know, for instance, Germany and other countries stepped away from nuclear power, which was one of the dumbest things ever to be done, the option of coal became more and more important. And even right now, coal is basically, you know, obviously an important part of world energy supply. Mm-hmm. I think around about a third of world energy is still coming from coal. And I don't see, you know, yes, we might just see nuclear and, you know, other things, you know, rise up. I don't think you can just scrap this coal, you know, capacity quickly, especially if you look at just some of the downsides of things like nuclear and other renewable energies, sorry.
And I take your point. And particularly, I mean, and you mentioned oil in the first bit there. I mean, certainly we're in a different space where energy is required. You mentioned the hyperscalers. We can bring a lot of solar into it. That requires a lot of battery. The short thing is that the energy transition is more than just a transition. It's a build out at the same time as demand is needed. You mentioned the US, huge shortages, and they're only going to build more data centers. That's only going to need only more power. If anything, we need more. And that probably brings other energy sources. And I'm thinking gas as well.
Yes, I mean the funniest thing I saw, I don't know whether this is true or not, but apparently the green movement in Germany, for instance, was driven by Russia. Secret magic. To take out the nuclear power plants. Look, I mean, unfortunately, in the world right now, if you decide to go and become the country that wants to be, you know, zero emissions, you want to, be all green or whatever, like the UK is, like much of Europe is doing, etc., you're just going to face rising energy prices. It's unfortunately that's where the world is at the moment. And you know, if other countries don't do that, like India and China, you're just going to be at a disadvantage when it comes to the production. And you're already seeing, for instance, manufacturing in China really, you know, ramping up significantly relative to places like the Europe and, you know, North America. And I do think that, you know, if you want to, you know, have, you know, obviously the altruistic vision of having a zero emission, you know, country or economy, you've got to face the fact that that's going to put you at a serious disadvantage against the Chinese and Indians and other countries that decide not to go down that route.
That's a fair point. And China's doing green, but they're doing nuclear and they are doing coal. They're doing bits of everything. They want power. They will do it any which way. A quick different question. SPA chair and deputy chair both out. And I suppose it's symbolic, but it doesn't in the immediate fix what is a troubled company and a stock that is trading, I don't know how far I have to zoom out, at 2006 levels, 20-year lows.
Yeah, look, I mean, the share price is down basically, 80% in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, the unfortunate thing is that I do think this is happening at a time in which the retail sector as a whole is going through a massive, massive, kind of paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. With Checkers 60/60, with all the other delivery services coming about, I don't see how we have the same kind of retail environment in 5 to 10 years time as we have currently have had for the last, say, 50 plus years. And you add to that the oncoming, juggernaut, which is going to be driverless vehicles. Can you imagine what driverless vehicles do when we have delivery services and driverless vehicles combined?
Yeah.
Put that with an app, you know what I mean? You've already seen in places like China, obviously quite new, but in China, you have these little kind of pillars, like parks or whatever, and you have flying drones delivering your food in the middle of a park. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Delivery services are going to be the new thing. And unfortunately, if you have a delivery service, guess what's great? It's having a centralized, large, well-capitalized company like a ShopRite. What's not that great? A bunch of franchises. So that, I think, is one of the issues that SPAR is going to have to face going forward, in addition to the other issues it's had in the past.
Yeah, and I take your point. Retail is just not going to be the same in 5 or 10 years. It isn't what it was 5 years ago. I mean, 60/60 is only, maybe 7 years old. We'll leave it there. Viv Govender, Rand Swiss, always appreciate the insights. That's our poll today on LinkedIn around SPA and the exiting of the chair and deputy chair. Does this help improve what is a tough situation? And as Viv makes the point there, a tough sector. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Tim Acker, portfolio manager, the Allan Gray Equity Fund. Tim, appreciate the early morning time. We have war, we have inflation, we have bond yields globally at multi-decade or in some case all-time highs. This should be a perfect situation for the hedge environment around gold. Instead, it seems to be acting more as a risk-on asset. It is not doing what one would normally expect gold to do, which is, I think, perhaps a warning for investors.
Yeah, good morning and good morning to the listeners. You're 100% right. So if we think, why do people historically own something like gold? Typically it holds its value quite well when other assets are down, when markets are falling, a hedge against inflation. It's typically seen as a store of value when people lose trust in a currency or in governments. And lately that's obviously the argument people have been using is, loss of confidence in the US dollar, independence of the Fed, these kind of arguments. But then as you point out, one would expect if there's a war, the gold price would be going up, but actually, the gold price is lower than where it started this year.
And that has implications. I mean, and the big one, I mean, we saw it last year where the local market had a spectacular year. That was in the back of gold and PGM miners. We're now seeing the inverse this year. I mean, Goldfields, AngloGold Ashanti, these are all sort of 30, 40% off the highs from earlier in the year. It's a tough time for investors.
Yeah, as you point out, many of these gold and platinum shares have, more or less halved this year from their peak and sort of, around February. And something that was worrying us last year is, yes, there are all these bullish long-term arguments for gold, but there's definitely been an increase in just general speculation and buyers by buying by investors of both gold and platinum, in addition to central banks also buying gold. And any idea that's a good idea can be taken too far, right? And at some point becomes a bad idea. So if there's just too much speculative activity, then that always makes us a little bit cautious. So we were taking profit in gold last year. This change in correlation, which sort of seems like a technical thing, but it just means that gold is moving with shares rather than in the opposite direction as it has a hedge. Definitely makes it less useful in a portfolio as a protection tool.
That was going to be my next point, because it's acting, I mean, gold has a purpose in a portfolio, to your point. It's a hedge, sure, and I might get some return from it, but its focus is on that hedge. Is there still opportunity here, or is this, and maybe it's an unanswerable question, I mean, is gold fundamentally broken? Does it go back to its hedge status? How are you viewing that at Allan Gray?
So we still think there's opportunity in gold. We still think it does serve a purpose. But the size in the portfolio, I think, is really the critical question. So it's one thing to say, I've got this hedge in my portfolio. It protects against something really bad happening. It's maybe 5% of my portfolio, maybe 10% of my portfolio, for in case something bad happens. But then it's a very different thing if gold and platinum becomes, close to a third of your portfolio, as it has in the all share index. Earlier this year, gold and platinum shares made up about a third of the index. So now it's dominating your return, right? And the volatility you're getting from that movement every day in the gold and platinum prices is moving your portfolio, sort of swinging it up and down. So that, we think, is a little bit of a dangerous situation. So we've definitely been trimming those positions and saying we still want to own gold, but just at a much smaller position size.
I get you. And back to sort of classic portfolio construction, which at the heart of it is diversification and managing that part of the process. We'll leave it there. Tim Acker, portfolio manager, the Allan Gray Equity Fund. Appreciate the early morning time. Give your money smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets. Think SARS isn't watching? Think again. Join MoneyWeb editor Raik van Niekerk in conversation with SARS Commissioner at the Money Summit. Together they will unpack how SARS has transformed tax collection through AI-powered audits, third-party data matching, and tougher compliance measures. Find out what every taxpayer and business needs to know. Tuesday, 1 September at the Sandton Convention Centre. Register for free using promo code MoneyWeb. Visit moneyweb.co.za and secure your seat today.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Arno van Heersten. He is Chief Solutions Officer at Helm. Arno, appreciate the time. WhatsApp, hugely popular with individuals. We are chatting on WhatsApp right now. But of course, business at the same time, they use it increasingly more these days. We've got changes in fees coming from Meta, who own WhatsApp. Broadly, what are these changes that are coming down the line?
Hey, Simon, yes. A couple of changes coming from a Meta perspective that impact users on the WhatsApp side. This is specifically related to users from a WhatsApp Business API perspective. So your general customer or user isn't being impacted. Even your business is using the standard business WhatsApp channel to manage their business, manage their customers, won't be impacted by this change. The only users being impacted by the change is those that use the WhatsApp Business API that allows you to integrate a backend platform or a digital agent or a customer support center channel into a WhatsApp channel so that multiple agents can address multiple customer needs at the same time. Now, the change specifically that's happening is maybe just as a little bit of context. Meta is always in the specific space for message tiers or message types. So the first one being marketing messages. Those have always been charged for. Those are your traditional marketing messages similar to what businesses have been using SMSs for. You also get authentication messages, so that's your OTP type of messages.
Business.
And then you've got your utility one, so that's to help businesses manage their audits from a e-commerce perspective. The last messaging type, which is the one that's predominantly being impacted now, is the service messages. So historically, in talking back to 24, Meta did charge for service messages, but they charged service messages in a slightly different way. So they asked customers when they start a conversation, the business was charged to open a 24-hour window with that customer, and interactions within that window was then no longer charged for as long as they happened within that window. In 25, Meta changed the entire model around message type and started charging for each individual message, specifically applying to marketing, utility, and authentication messages, where they also charged for those on a 24-hour Windows cycle approach as well. Those went to a per-message model, and they're now applying that same approach to service messages. So when they introduced the per-message fees, they took message fees away from the service side. So you were no longer paying for those service messages between the user or end user and then the business. But now they're reintroducing those service messages to businesses. And they're not going to happen on a 24-hour window cycle. They will actually be happening on a per message fee side as well, similar to how they approach the rest of their messaging structure going forward.
Gotcha. And this is, I mean, firstly, this is heavy users, I imagine, because they're going through an API. But a big part of this is that because they're a heavy user, I mean, I don't know, a 5 or 10 cent fee really has an implication. And businesses need to, perhaps there's ways they can get smart around this.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Simon. So looking at what Meta has announced, they are looking at fees similar to utility or authentication message fees, which means anywhere between 10 and 15 cents a message, which is quite substantial, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the amount of conversation that flows between the businesses and customers. Now, to your point, there is definitely stuff that businesses can do and can look at from optimizing their channel without reducing or impacting the customer experience, because we've all done this to try and improve customer experience as far as possible. And, you know, deflect calls from a call center into a channel where most customers can be managed. Now, Meta has, over the last couple of years, introduced a bunch of new messaging formats that businesses can utilize to reduce the amount of messages required to get the same message across, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, carousels, there's new menu structures, there is forms that they can use, there's survey platforms, all which allows a customer to interact with the business, answer a bunch of questions, or look at a bunch of content without having to send, let's say, 5, 6, 7 messages in between to get the same amount of information across between the customers. So business will have to start looking at those kind of opportunities. They'll have to look at how they structure their conversations within these channels going forward to make sure that there's no unnecessary messages in between the customers. They'll also most likely start looking at what they utilize the channel for mostly. Would that be service? Would that just be product information or sales kind of stuff? You know, kind of optimize these channels to reduce the impact that these costs could potentially have on a business. Because the size of the number and the volume of messages, it does have a big financial impact on businesses, and they'll have to plan for this and budget for it as part of the service to customers going forward.
Yeah, gotcha. And I take your point. Yeah, it's understanding what that is, because this has become an important sales channel. A quick last question. When is the change coming into effect? As I understand, it's still down the line. Business have got a bit of time to get ready.
Yeah, so businesses do have a little bit of time left. They announced this in the beginning of July, if I remember correctly. The Meta team have announced that they will, at the latest on the 1st of September, tell us what the actual rate is. So we've been working on speculative numbers at the moment, but we'll officially know what the rate and how they'll apply that rate. We'll know that on the 1st of September, or the latest the 1st of September. And this will officially, based on the news and as things stand now, kick off on the 1st of October this year.
Okay, 1st of October, so time is pressing. We'll leave it there. That's Arno van Heerden, he's Chief Solutions Officer at Helm. That's it for today. Yesterday we were chatting with Nick Kunze, he of course Sanlam Private Wealth, talking around the pressure on South African consumers. We got another fuel hike expected for September. We asked you how your household budget is holding up. Just over 40% said tough but managing. Just under 40% said a real struggle. With the rest of you said you are doing all right. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, while medical aid savings never lost.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.